Welcome to Scouts Out, an original science fiction story by A.A. Foringer, set in his Outfitters universe. All of the Outfitters universe stories are available in ebook format at smashwords.com. If you would like to support the author or read the story for yourself, please buy the book at smashwords.com.
Chapter 32. Okay, what happened after you and the diplomatic team left the ship?
God, you guys are annoying, Leo said, taking a sip from the glass of water on the table.
Captain, we are just trying to get the facts straight. This information could be useful to any future diplomatic missions with the Alarians, the senior lieutenant stated emphatically.
Future missions? Leo sputtered, almost spitting out the water from his mouth.
Well, hope springs eternal. The only success that I saw come out of this mission is that we did not lose our heads or the ship.
On the contrary, Captain Grant, the Commander and the Admiral see this mission as a huge success.
You mean Commander Wasbowski came out of his coma? When did that happen? Why didn't somebody tell me?
Setting his cup down quickly and starting to rise.
The Malaysian lieutenant held up his hand, halting Leo's rise.
I am sorry, I should have said Commander St. James. There has been no change in Commander Wasbowski's condition.
Oh, I see, Leo said sadly.
Now then, your report was very thorough and concise, but we want your impressions on the Alarians, Captain, the Malaysian officer continued.
You want my impressions of the Alarians, huh?
Okay, I'll give it to you. They are a bunch of bloodthirsty, arrogant, conceited animals that should be obliterated from space. That is what I think of the Alarians.
The Chinese captain nodded at Leo across the table.
Okay, now then, in your own words, tell us what happened to make you feel that way.
Leo stared angrily across the table at the men, then took a deep breath.
We have been over this 3 times already. How many times do I have to repeat myself?
As many times as we think necessary, the reply came back, with just a hint of anger as well.
Leo looked at the 2 officers, and then resigned himself to going through it 1 more time.
What ship are you guys from again? Leo asked, looking over their uniforms, trying to find out some sort of insignia besides their rank.
That is really not important. You just have to understand we are working directly for the Admiral on this, the Chinese captain stated firmly.
Well, you see, I just wanted to know so I could avoid you 2 in the future, Leo added, hoping to get a rise from the 2.
They just stared back at Leo.
You guys must be some kind of spies, huh?
Again, no reaction.
Leo changed tactics after realizing these 2 were professionals.
Whatever. Just once this is over, I don't want to have any more dealings with you 2.
Fair enough, Captain. We shall try and steer clear of you and your ship as well.
Well, where were we again? I want to finish up.
The Malaysian officer looked at his comm panel.
You and your team with the commander had just departed the ship.
Well, we left the ship and met the Alarians. They were big. The smallest one was easily 2 meters tall, and the biggest one, almost 3 meters.
There must have been 50 of them standing around in a semicircle around us with weapons, the unfriendly portion pointed towards us.
They wouldn't come close to us at first, they just ran scans on us from a distance.
I wish it had been a bit further away and downwind, because they stunk, sort of like burning rubber and rotten egg smell combined.
We did get used to it after a while, but at first I wanted to puke.
After about 10 minutes of standing out in the rain, being scanned, the first Garg approached us.
Which of you is Captain Grant?
I am, and you are the first Garg?
Right after that, the jerk spits on me.
He hits me square in the chest. I knew he was coming. I still could not believe it. But I stood there and let this glob of blue phlegm slide down my chest. I know he's supposed to be honored and relieved that he aimed so high. The higher they spit on you, the greater the chance you have of living till sundown. But it still ticked me off to no end.
I am, and what do you have to show me to value this discussion?
Well, I pulled out the platinum Mayan figure and handed it to him. He examined it, then he scanned it, then he bit it, then he spit on it. I mean, I shouldn't have been surprised, but I was again. He then turned his attention to me. I stood still as he examined me, as he did the rest of the team.
And who wishes to speak to my Asidi? The Alarian said with a sneer.
I do, the commander's voice boomed from behind Leo.
Very well, the first Garg responded, sizing up the man.
Leo piped in at this point. If we may be allowed to proceed to meeting with the Asidia, I think he would be most pleased.
The next thing Leo knew, he was lying flat on the back, sprawled out in the wet grass, the first Garg standing on top of him. "I will tell you when the Ascidi will be most pleased to see you." He then muttered something under his breath and strolled away. Leo slowly got to his feet. Verde, Fenucci, and Gonzalez had almost gone for their weapons, but the whine of 50 or so blasters around them had slowed them down enough to think about what they were doing. "Yes, First Gog, I spoke out of turn. Please excuse me for my boldness. Do not let it happen again. Now then, before we proceed, I want you and your crew to deposit their weapons on the ground. We do not allow foreigners to walk around Semna with weapons. There might be an accident, which would be most unfortunate." The last was said with a sort of smile that reminded Leo of a snake. "Well, we dropped our weapons right there, in the grass, our energy weapons, that is. We each kept our personal weapons on us. The first Garg did not say anything, so we assumed that either did not care or were not worried about them. Well, after that, we were surrounded, escorted to an open-air cargo hovercraft. We got on, just my people, that is. This thing must have been either pre-programmed or it was under remote control because none of the Larians got on with us. And after a few minutes, the thing lifted off, with a hovercraft in front and 1 to 2 in the rear. Both of them heavily armed and their weapons trained on us the entire time. We went along like this for about an hour, us standing around in the rain, moving at about 100 kilometers an hour, getting soaked to the bone. Nothing to see for miles except grasslands, sort of like being back on Sanctuary, but the grass was brownish green and the sky was a nasty brownish gray color due to all the clouds. At the end of the hour, we spotted a huge castle, and that is the only way to describe it, a castle. It looked like something out of a fairy tale, except for one small feature. There was not a single inch that was not covered with spikes. Barbed spikes, straight spikes, curved spikes, you name it, it was spiked. But the place was huge, too, probably 20 to 30 stories high at the lowest points, and probably 50 stories at the highest tower. We could also see the guns. They must have been a huge laser cannon every 50 yards. From what we could see, the exterior walls were all at least 10 miles long. All in all, a very scary, very impressive building. The hovercrafts entered at a very small gate, a tunnel really, about 100 meters long and pitch black. Couldn't have been more than 2 feet clearance on either side of the hovercraft. Gonzalez, who had brought along a scanner of his own, nudged me while going through the tunnel. He did not see a seam or read a break the entire way through. "You mean the tunnel was carved from one solid rock?" the Malaysian officer interrupted. "That's what the scanner said. I could not believe it either at first, but when we left we ran the scan again. Same results. One solid piece of rock," Leo explained. "Amazing." "Yeah, well, the whole castle was just plain amazing," Leo said, taking a sip of water, then started back on the story. "Well, we came into an open-air courtyard. The hovercrafts landed, and we were escorted through a door at gunpoint. We were led down several hallways being scanned more and more. I think by the time we left the castle, the counts on the scans came up to 25. We were taken to a large area that could only be called a waiting room and told to sit. The only one that addressed us this entire time was the first Garg. We sat there for an hour. The benches were just big slabs of stone, and I don't think the place was heated at all. There were guards on us the entire time, probably about 20 that we could see, around doors and along the walls. All of them had their fingers on the triggers pointing at us. They had some control, though. No matter how much we flinched or fidgeted while sitting on the benches, they never moved. They were like statues. Pretty soon, the huge set of double doors the first Gog had gone through opened back up and he came back. "You may come in. You have 7 minutes to state your case to the Ascidi." We rose, this time with the commander in the front, and the rest of us fanned out behind him in a V-type formation. "Did I tell you that the double doors were huge as well? At least 30 feet high, a foot thick, and 40 feet wide. After going through these doors, we found ourselves in a huge hall. I mean, you could have put 3 professional sports arenas in this hall and had room to spare for a couple high school football fields. From what I could see, we were at one end, and a raised platform with the Ascidi on it was at the other end. It took us about 10 minutes to walk from the one end to the other. The first Gog in front of us with about 50 guards around us. So away we went, us in the middle, and those stinky Alarians all around us. When we got up to the platform, we were stopped. The first Garg turned and motioned for the commander to come forward. He went up to the platform, which is about 10 feet higher than the floor, and about 50 yards wide, and up to a chair where the Ascidi sat. I couldn't hear what was said, but I could tell you right away we're in trouble. The Asidi took one look at the commander and spit on his leg, about knee high. Then he took the Mayan figurine I'd given the first Gog and threw it across the dais. I could hear the Asidi talking, most of it coming out in a growl. In response, Commander Wisbowski kept up a very level tone. So you never heard a word of what was said between the two of them? This time the question came from the Chinese captain. Not a word. The only one that knows is the commander, and he has not said anything since then, so your guess is as good as mine, Leo replied calmly. What happened then? The Malaysian officer said, sitting at the edge of his chair. Well, the commander went into his spiel. He had gone over it once before with me, and I'm sure the admiral knows the basic contents. It was basically a trade proposal, along with the promises of a diplomatic liaison. I'm sure it was in the commander's files, Leo said, trying to sound helpful. It was, but you never know how he might have deviated from it slightly. We wanted to know if you knew for sure if he did, the captain stated matter-of-factly. Like I said before, I couldn't hear what was being said. Okay, then, why don't you continue? This went on for about 5 minutes. All along, the Asidi was circling the commander like a shark. The commander kept still and just barely turned his head to keep the jerk in view. He was so cool. I mean, it was like he had complete control over the situation. I could tell, though, the Asidi was growing more and more pissed by the second, but the commander just continued his offer. Then the Illyrian did it. He reached out and grabbed the commander's sword. This was the samurai sword that he had carried with him, the only weapon the commander had. I knew this thing was razor sharp. I had seen the commander cutting pieces of paper in midair that had been dropped by our flying droids. He was very good with the thing. Well, the Illyrian just played with it for a while, slashing through the air around the commander, at one point cutting a pillow in half that was sitting nearby. Then he stuck the blade in a cauldron that was sitting near his throne. When the blade came out, it was covered with a yellow liquid that coated the blade from hilt to point. That is when this happened. If I hadn't been staring directly at it, I would not have believed it. The Illyrian turned around as casually as one could and cut off the commander's leg with a quick slash. The commander fell, and blood started to spurt everywhere. I started to move towards the platform, but it was immediately surrounded by guards, shoved me and my crew back. Then I heard him. "Stand your ground, Captain," the commander yelled. I could hear the pain in his voice, but somehow he was still composed, but you could hear the concentration on every syllable. We were shoved back to where we were originally standing. I could see him laying on the ground, one hand clamped over the wound, the other holding him in a sitting position. The look of pain on his face was incredible, but he did not cry out or yell or nothing. He just sat there staring at the Illyrian. The Illyrian leader didn't even acknowledge him. He was so engrossed in looking at the severed leg that he had picked up from the floor. It was dripping blood all over him. Then the Illyrian spoke in a loud enough tone that I could hear him. "This meeting is finished. Take this thing away." Then he calmly walked away, off the platform, carrying the leg with him. The first guard motioned towards me and my men. We were allowed at that point to go up to the platform. My medic, Fanucci, immediately sprayed a sealant on the wound and shot up the commander with a stabilizer to keep him from going into shock. We bandaged him up as best we could and were about to pick him up when he regained consciousness for a minute. He looked at me and said, "Well, I guess that means we can go back to the fleet with a clear conscience, eh, Captain?" Then he passed out. "And he did not gain consciousness the whole way back here?" "No, we put him in the auto dock as soon as we got on board, and Fanucci spent almost the entire 2 months by his side, but he's not woken up since." "Was anything else said to you while going back to the ship?" "Nothing. I don't even think the first guard went back. I didn't see him after we left the castle." "Do you have anything to report about your trip back? Do you think anyone tried to follow you?" "I think they tried, but we lost them after the first month." "Are you sure you were not followed?" the lieutenant asked this time. Leo was pissed. They had been over this 3 times, and it was covered extensively in his report. "Listen, what the hell do you do for a living around here?" he said, pointing a finger at the lieutenant. "You are not cleared for that information, Captain Grant." "Let me give you a little clue about recon ships, and me in particular. When I don't want to be followed, I'm not. You may play games around here, but I don't. Me and my crew spent 2 months getting back here. We spent more days than I care to remember at energy level 1-. We made a jump into deep space and sat there with my computer in near hysterics because he could not, in his opinion, get a good enough fix to jump us back out. All along, I had the assistant fleet commander lying in the auto dock, barely alive because of some poison the freaking Alarian put into his system with his own sword. So don't you question me, my crew, my ship, or my abilities. We are the best in the fleet. That is why we were picked for this mission. Leo had been getting louder and louder as he went on, and was shouting at the man whom had backed away from the table. Calm down, Captain Grant. I know you've been under a lot of stress, the Chinese captain said, putting a brotherly hand on Leo's shoulder. Leo shrugged it off angrily. Do you have any other questions of me? Not at this time. You can return to the ship, Captain. Thanks, Leo mumbled under his breath as he gathered up his vest. Captain, can I buy you a drink later? The Chinese captain said, extending his hand. Leo glared, but reached out and shook the man's hand. No, I don't think so. Then he turned and stomped away in a black mood. The line was down on landing deck 5 of the big ship. Leo took the lift, which asked him for his authorization to enter the landing deck. Leo stated his name and rank, which was quickly cross-matched with the authorized list. After a few seconds, the door opened quickly, and Leo entered the huge hangar. His ship was the only one here. The whole hangar deck had been set aside and quarantined. This was due to what happened to the ship while Leo and the commander had their fateful meeting with the Asidi. As soon as Leo had gotten out of the castle, he had checked in. Yoshi, prepare for takeoff. As soon as we get back, we are leaving this planet. Cap, we have a situation here, Yoshi said, as calmly as he could. Well, I got one here, too. They cut off the commander's leg.
They did what?
The Asidi cut off his leg. He is stable for now, but Finucci is worried about him. Well, we got something bad going on here. About 10 minutes ago, a hovercraft came over the wall. From the markings on the Alarians' faces, they are the nephews of the Asidi. Yoshi was referring to the tattoos on the faces denoting rank and family status. What are they doing? Leo shouted due to the hovercraft picking up speed as they hit the open plains. They are spraying the line down with the substance that Larry has identified as fecal matter. What are they spraying? Leo asked, again not sure he was hearing right. Fecal matter. Okay, hold tight. Can we take off with it on? Larry thinks so, but once we get into space, he will not be able to do anything except navigation and make calculations for hyperspace. Tell him that is okay. We can handle everything else manually. I just want to get off this planet and head back home. Got it? Okay, I'll tell him. Anything else? No, we will be back soon. When they got back to the ship, it was covered with a green slime substance that smelled worse than the Alarians. Once back on board, they took off without incident, but Leo could still hear the laughter of the Alarians as they sat on the wall. Now the quarantine was lifted, but not the restricted access. So far, it was limited to repair personnel and some people doing research. The hull had been initially cleaned in space by Leo and the crew, who had donned pressure suits and used low settings on the blasters to cut some of the material off. Now the line was being gone over, literally inch by inch, and the offending matter was being cleaned off with laser brushes. Leo approached the ship, happy to be back on the Redemption with her and his whole crew still alive. Then he sighed. The commander was sort of lucky. There was still hope. He was only hanging on, but from what the doctors could tell, they had eliminated all the poison from his system, but the muscular man was still in a coma. The doctors were trying everything they could, but nothing was working. They had even tried to regenerate a new leg on the side of the old one, but the poison had a non-healing property, and even though the wound was closed, a new limb could not be grafted onto the location. Leo wandered underneath the lion till he was calm and in a better mood to talk to people who hadn't offended him. Standing on a semi-permanent podium behind an electronic drafting board-sized layout of the lion was Faith, who had worked almost non-stop since the lion returned. She had directed the cleaning of almost every exterior piece of equipment on the lion, be dismantled, analyzed, cleaned, and reassembled. The only time they had spent together was a few minutes between her shifts and his debriefings. Two more days until Sunday, and then they were going to spend the entire day together. Hi there, Leo said, stepping up to the platform. Hi there yourself, Faith said, without looking up annotations she was making. Nice weather we are having. Yes, very nice, she said, again without looking up. Leo rolled his eyes. When she got involved in something, the rest of the world disappeared. I'll talk to you later, okay? Leo said. Sure, later. Leo smiled and hopped down off the podium, made his way over to the alcove off one side, sitting around on crates and benches were Fia, Finucci, and Moon. "What's the word?" Leo looked for a place to sit down. Fia knocked over a bucket of spare parts with his foot, then reached behind his own seat into a cooler and threw Leo a beer. "See, you're making yourself at home, Chief." "Well, after we've been through, no reason not to take things slow when given the opportunity." "Where is everyone?" Finucci burped loudly, followed closely by Moon. "Pigs," Leo chuckled. "Well, I sent some of the guys on errands. Packer and Logan are down on deck four with the sharks, and Yoshi and Abe went on board to make some more beer," the chief said, reclining fully on the tool bench. Leo opened the beer and took a swig. The guys had been busting the drinking rule on the Redemption since they had arrived. After the first day of cleaning the hull, Fia had started passing out beers at lunch. The technicians from the Redemption did not touch them, but the ones Faith had brought over from the Endurance had chastely chugged them down with gusto. The crew had not been able to go to any of the lounges on board due to the restricted nature of the mission they had been on, so Leo had let the guys break the rules about drinking. So far, the only person that had complained had been the head technician assigned to the detail from the Redemption, but since Faith was in charge of the overall project, the complaint had fallen on deaf ears. Chapter 33. Good afternoon. It has been a long time since I have spoken to the entire fleet, and I apologize for that. But conditions have been such that it was not wise to do so until now, the Admiral added this last phrase grimly. Leo looked up from the screen, checked around. All the men were staring intently. I would like to thank you all for your patience, hard work, and commitment these last several months. Thanks to your efforts, Defensive Line Wolf is now completed, and construction has begun on Defensive Line Bear, and preliminary surveys have begun on Defensive Line Cougar. Wow, that is great, Leo thought. Also, Earth has been contacted, and they have been warned of what is going on out here. Leo had known that for a while. It was just good that every person in the fleet knew. A diplomatic mission has been sent to the Alarians, and has been turned down at great personal cost to the man who took the message of peace to them. So with a clear conscience, we can begin to actively defend our home. A mumbling arose from the crew. It quickly subsided. In the near future, we will begin limited offensive operations against the Horde. We will only attack legitimate military targets and never in great numbers. I have no desire for the Alarians to know our true strength and the size of this force or the locations of our home. More murmuring. We will continue with the current state of rotation on defensive lines using small portions of the QRF to conduct raids on the Alarian frontier. I would like to thank you all again for your endurance, hard work, and positive spirit. Vayo con Dios, my brothers and sisters. The transmission ended, and it took only a few seconds for the voices to start. About time. Hey, Leo, where's the 5th Squadron, and when are we going to be on the QRF? How come he did not say anything about the commander? He did, dummy. You didn't hear what he said about the man who took the message of peace? Leo stared into his beer, then looked around the room. When it had been announced the Admiral was going to address the fleet, Faith had gone over to the table to seat with her technicians. He saw her talking with her assistants. Leo gathered up her drink, which she had left in the bar, and walked over to the table. Faith looked up and smiled. Leo could tell it was a forced smile, that she didn't feel like smiling. Leo waited patiently for her to finish talking to her people. Then they both walked out of the bar together. They arranged for one of the holodecks 2 days ago, and Leo had decided, no matter what, they were going to use it. Even if it just meant going in and falling asleep in a moonlit meadow. Chapter 34. 8 March, 2152. Coming up on the daylight side of the planet in 5 minutes, Yoshida announced calmly. Transmissions are still normal from the target. No spikes, no bursts, and no change in energy levels, Gutenberg added. Steady as she goes, boys. Leo, confirmation 100% that the ship is an Alarian bulk cruiser. Registry marks show it as belonging to the Acedi of the Arrak clans, own fleet.
If intelligence reports are correct, is carrying materials for the defensive base on his frontier, Larry spurted. It matches all the aspects. Even if it's not carrying weapons material, its course indicates it's going to the frontier base, Moon added hopefully. Only took Leo 2 seconds to decide. Okay, get ready to pounce. Abe, send a transmission to the sharks. Everyone else you have, Leo looked at his panel. 3 minutes, 25 seconds till we are seen. Let's get ready to rumble. Leo punched up his displays. All circuits and powers were ready to flow, just a few punches of prop switches, and the ship would be fully charged and ready to go. Then the line would have the revenge on the Arak clan. The crew had been waiting for this moment for 5 months, 2 days, and 17 hours. When leaving the Redemption, the Admiral himself had come down to see them off. The men had assembled on the deck in front of the ship, and he had shook each of their hands. Then he leaned over to Leo and told him something. The first mission that comes up that delivers a blow against the Acedi, I will call upon you. Leo nodded quietly. After taking off in the Redemption, Leo had shared the information with the men. The cheer that was raised almost blew out some of the audio circuits. Just got back the burst transmission from the Jaguar. They are ready to pounce, Gutenberg announced. Let us do this with feeling, folks. Let's kick their ass, Fia's voice came over the headset. Merlin, initiate attack when ready, Leo announced. The launch from their parking orbit was gentle, increasing as they moved forward. Leo could hear Abe activating his jamming program as they approached the freighter. Any second he would be hitting the button activating the communications instruments that would scramble the freighter's sensors from the inside out. Yoshi was cutting the distance to the freighter both mentally and physically. The man was like a chess player working at the speed of light, working on the current intercept course and 10 possibilities of what if. What if the freighter made a jump? What if the freighter ducked behind that planet? What if? What if? Moon was targeting the freighter. First the engines, then the weapons, then the bridge with the main guns of the Lion. Meanwhile, he'd be handing out an ever-changing priority list to Gonzalez, Verde, Holiday, Fundakowski, and Flavius. If Moon got too busy with his own tasks, Gonzalez would take over the targeting list. Finally, Finucci and Tuatelli would be back in the engineering section, ready to reroute systems, send the robots to fix equipment, haul breaches, or blown circuits. Leo, well, he just oversaw everything, looking at the big picture and giving the last-minute change if it was necessary. Not that the crew needed much direction. After more than 2 years together, their thoughts and their actions worked together like a well-oiled machine. In range, in 3, 2, 1, fire on targets as they present themselves. That was Moon's standard order. Leo liked fire at will, but Moon liked to sound more formal. Torpedoes away, the Lion bucks gently, with both torpedoes shooting away at once. Leo checked his screens. The sharks were converging from almost the opposite direction. Both of them had fired their torpedoes almost the exact second as the Lion. Leo checked. It was going to be close, but the Lion's attack would get to the freighter first, blowing out the engines, while the sharks' missiles would take out the bridge. Attempted transmission, Abe announced, then not even giving Leo a chance to ask the obvious question. I have that channel blocked. 10 seconds to torpedo impact, Moon said loudly. Gonzalez's voice chimed in. In range now for cannon fire. Leo watched his board light up as power started to flow erratically throughout the ship, draining some circuits while trying to replace what was being unleashed by the 3 forward cannons. Luckily, nothing was even near the blowout stage yet. Torpedoes hit. Leo looked up and caught a brief flare of light in the direction they were heading. Torpedoes from the shark hit. Another flare-up. Battle damage assessment, Leo stated loudly. Target engines out, Moon said triumphantly. Their bridge is out, and they have an atmosphere leak up front, Backer said. All this time, Leo could hear the shipboard blasters firing away. Okay, just like we practiced, Leo said calmly. The Lion strafed along to the side of the giant freighter, shooting sensors and weapon ports, while at the same time the sharks were doing the exact same thing on the opposite side of the ship. Rear torpedo away. Breaking away for second torpedo run, Yoshi announced, as Leo could feel the ship pull to the right. Leo called out, damage report. Minor radiation to the front shields from their engine explosion. Shields still at 95%. It took one short hit to the back of the ship, which blew out a few sensors, Fia announced. Time to fix them? Leo asked quietly, feeling the ship start to loop back to the torpedo firing position. 50 minutes, outside in suits, Fia stated, but we can still jump with the damage.
Aiming for their reactors, Moon declared. The sharks are doing the same. The ship paused momentarily as their torpedoes shot away towards their target. Taking a run over the top of the ship, the first mate announced. Okay, make it quick, everyone. I want to be clear when that ship blows. Moon turned towards Leo. Boy, you got a lot of confidence in my target selection. Not really. I just think that ship is booby-trapped, no matter whether we hit the reactors or not. The Arcidi doesn't want anyone else to have those supplies. Thanks a lot, Moon shot back. Rear torpedo away. The ship jilted and shook as Yoshida tried to make the ship a harder target to hit. They cleared the far side of the ship and shot away from the huge freighter, which dwarfed them several times over. Sharks are in the clear with no damage. The freighter is gone, Yoshida announced over the ship-wide channel. Gone. Leo could never get over that. A huge explosion had just occurred directly behind the Lion, and he had not heard a thing, thanks to the vacuum of space. Good job, everyone. We just put a hurt on the Arcidi that he will not be able to recover from quickly. Yes. Teach him to dump crap on the Lion. Can't wait to tell the commander. Firing on incoming debris, the voice of Fenucci came over the speakers for the first time. Okay, Yoshi, get us out of the wreckage field and to the pickup point. Leo took off his comm unit and reached into his pocket for a bandana. After wiping off his face and neck, he stuffed the rag back in his pocket. Abe, any chance they got a message off? There's all that chance, Captain, but I think it's highly unlikely, the former tanker answered. Okay, everyone, start running diagnostics. I want to be ready to move. Jump 5 minutes after we complete the rendezvous. Abe, are the scanners and sensors up to level 9? Right after the explosion. Good. Leo surveyed his screens, and then the bridge. The crew had done the ambush drill so many times they could do it all in their sleep. This is the first time they had attacked a live target. Okay, everyone, by the numbers. Chapter 35. Coming up on retrieval point Juliet 32, Moon stated calmly. Got anything on scans, Abe? No. No cylinder, no metallic objects, or energy fields. Nothing out there, Leo, the man replied. Okay, people, let's make it look like a hole in space for an hour. Sensors up to 9, Abe. We need to give the message capsule a chance if it is there. The current bridge crew grumbled. In all the attempted pickups of message capsules from the fleet intelligence, not one capsule had been found. They had gone through this so many times, go to the proposed location, and sit, waiting for a 1-meter-long container to be found containing some useful information gathered by fleet intel collection assets. Leo learned that the two guys who had debriefed him, as well as the others that interviewed his crew after the diplomatic missions, were fleet intelligence. Now they are looking for messages from these types of operatives that were to be relayed to the fleet as soon as they were found, if they were found. Okay, keep me informed. Leo unbuckled himself and wandered back to the replicators. Holiday's voice came echoing down the ladder from his upper ball turret. Hey, Cap, has anyone ever found one of these things? Leo stuck his head into the ladder shaft and yelled back, If I knew the answer to that, it would definitely be classified, and the answer is not that I know of, but we are going to continue to look for them when and where we are told. Chapter 36. Leo, time for your shift, the disembodied voice of Larry came to him. Leo sat up and shuffled to the replicator and got an orange juice. Larry, get me Yoshi. Yeah, what's up? The first mate responded a few minutes later. Anything going on? Nothing. Okay, I'll be up in a few minutes. He pulled on his jacket and gathered up his boots. Larry, how many days left on this patrol? The normal rotation has 20 days left, Captain. Leo groaned as he made his way out the door. Chapter 37. About to leave hyperspace. Okay, everyone. Know what we are supposed to do? 11 affirmatives lighted up on Leo's board. Okay, let's make some noise. A Bruce Springsteen song blared through the internal speakers, and every light on the board went to full brilliance. Coming in approach on planet Feifel Dice. The next half hour passed uneventfully, and Leo found himself tapping his instrument panel along with the music. Leo noticed several lights come up on his panel, and Abe motioned with his hand. I have liftoff from the three bases, a total of 6 bogeys in the air now. Wow, they are alert today, Moon stated over the music. Yeah, I guess they are buying it, Leo replied loudly enough for everyone to hear. How long till intercept? About 10 minutes, Yoshi replied. Okay, head toward the moon and let us lead them to the spider web. The ship banked sharply and shot away from the planet. We got 3 more launches. That brings the total to 15 bogeys in the air, Abe announced calmly. Anyone have any patrol ships out there? Gonzalez replied this time. No, but I have a high burst of communication energy from the other side of the planet. Maybe the other ships drew them over there. Well, we got enough to worry about now. We can help those guys out later if we need to. Bogeys are confirmed. There are 2 man Alarian fighters. Good. Easier to hit, the voice of Verde said. I'll remember that in the after-action review. Uh-oh, Verde responded. Busted, Holiday retorted from his own gun turret. First wave of bogeys will be in range within 1 minute, Yoshi stated calmly. Gunners, time to earn your pay, Gonzalez added. Leo switched a section of his board over to show Abe's display. Sure enough, there was a lot of energy flowing in both Alarian military frequencies as well as the fleet's channels, but unfortunately, it would take too much time to decode it all right now. The plan had been simple, make it look like a raid was taking place on the daylight side of Fival, hopefully draw some resources away from the dark side of the planet. Then 2 other recon ships, minus their sharks, would take out some of the military supply bases during the planet's night. Splash 2 bogeys, Gonzalez stated. Good job, Verde. That was great shooting, Finucci. I got visual contact with the sharks. They are moving towards us now. Leo checked his panel looking for trouble. Okay, how long till they join the fun? Less than a minute, Yoshi replied. Okay, get ready to do a loop and come back at the bogeys as soon as the sharks get in weapons range, Leo announced, feeling the excitement creep into his voice but trying to control it. Splash 1 more bogey, Moon announced. How long till the remaining ones are in range? Abe asked. Less than 30 seconds, Yoshi announced. Prepare flare torpedoes, Moon, Leo stated. Gunners and all shark pilots, drop your face shields and Larry prepare for flare over the public channel and to the sharks. Do it, Moon. Rear torpedo away. Leo held his breath. Flash, flash, flash. Loop and roll now. Hit them, hit them. Gonzalez's voice came over the comm units and through the air. 1 down, Verde. 2 down, Finucci. 3 down, Holiday. 4 down, Fundakowski. Going into roll, Yoshi announced. We are taking the ones to your new left, Packer's voice came over the speakers. Moon, assign the 5 on the right, Leo added. Guys, targets are marked. Take them when you can, Moon asserted. Leo watched the energy spikes on the weapon systems as the targets were acquired and fired upon. 3 down. No, 4. Red lights began flashing on Leo's plano. Verde, shut down your weapon now. You got a power conduit behind you about to blow. Leo tried to shut it down from his stations, but wasn't fast enough. The next thing he knew, there was a flared-up note. Fia, Flavius, get Pablo out of his turret. Leo knew that the fire-suppressant devices would be functioning, snuffing out any dangerous heat sources in less than 10 seconds. Leo checked his board to see what had caused the blowout and found it. The surface of the ship had taken a hit near Verde's turret. This had caused a cascade of failures, resulting in the power coolant not flowing. Leo checked on his tactical display. The sharks had taken a beat on all 3 remaining Alarians. Leo rechecked the other systems in the ship. Everything appeared to be operating within normal parameters. The port side main cannon had a primary circuit fuse, but the secondary circuit was working just fine. Report, Fia. Pablo got knocked unconscious and has severe burns on his lower back and buttocks, the man breathed heavily. I almost have him in the auto dock. Okay, get him in there. Where's Flavius? I'm in his turret now, Captain, the small man replied. I should be able to fix his turret in about a half an hour. I need to fasten that. We might have to go help the rest of the ships out there. I want us all going in with all our teeth intact. Working on it, Captain. Okay, when you get it fixed, I want you to assume his position during the next fight. Roger. What is the situation, Packer? Leo asked, toggling his switch. Packer responded as the acting shark team commander. We got the last one a few seconds ago. Energy levels on all sharks are between 75% and 80%. We all got a full load of torpedoes. No serious damage noted this time, but some of the guys are going to need new paint jobs. Okay, pull into the support position, Yoshi, you are the leader, laying a course, and head towards the initial rendezvous point, max speed.
You got it, Leo, the first mate replied.
Abe, Larry, try and figure out what's going on with the attack force, and then call Ivan and Kim. See if they need any help.
Two voices replied affirmatively.
Fia, how is he doing? Good. The readout on the auto dock says he will be ready to go in about 40 minutes. Okay, leave him. Get back to engineering.
Moving, Captain.
Moon, damage report.
We got 5 hits. The one near the top turret was the worst. 3 were minor, and the 4th might have screwed up our port side bow landing gear. Still trying to figure that out, though.
Okay. Leo activated the PA channel. Good job, everyone, but it is not over yet. We might have to go bail some people out. Abe, any word from the Warrior and the Stallion?
Yeah, Kim wants us over to help cover withdrawal, and he has changed the rendezvous point to Beta 5.
Okay, Yoshi, make your corrections. Gang, it looks like the rest of the ship's got into some trouble, and they need the Lion and friends to cover the tactical withdrawal. Yoshi, how much longer till some form of contact?
If all stays the same and no more bogeys show up, 20 minutes.
Okay, gunners, get down and execute a preliminary visual check. Report any damage to Moon. Fia, run a quick and dirty diagnostic on the weapons and shields. I want to know what else might have been affected. Gonzo, you have control of the turrets. Let's move, people.
That feels good.
Well, I am to please, Leo said, rubbing her shoulders. That was a good dinner.
Thanks. I haven't been eating much red meat lately, and I thought you would like a nice steak.
You were right on that, Leo continued to rub her shoulders.
Faith grabbed his hands and rubbed them against her face. Do you want to sit down? She said, sweetly turning to look up at him.
Sure. Leo held her hand and they walked to the couch near the window. Leo sat down.
Faith stayed standing.
Want a drink?
Sure.
The usual.
Sure.
The usual?
Yeah, I guess so.
Faith went over to the replicator, got Leo a rum and coke, and got herself a glass of red wine. She handed it to him and sat down, snuggled up against him. They sat this way for a long time, sipping their drinks.
So what happened out there? Faith said, as she turned around and brushed the hair off her face.
The motion drove Leo crazy every time he saw her do it.
Well, you knew we were the bait in the raid to draw the Alarians away from the main area of the attack.
Faith just nodded her head.
Well, everything was going fine. We had drawn out some of the fighters, and the other ships were attacking their points. You know, supply points, fuel and ammo dumps. You know, basic military targets in the Fival system.
Yeah, I knew that much.
Now it was Leo's turn just to nod.
So what went wrong?
We thought we had drawn out most of the defense forces on the planet. Then bad things started to happen. We decoded all the traffic from the far side of Fival. What had happened was the raiding party had run into a hornet's nest of trouble.
A fluke, really.
Kim and Ivan had come out of hyperspace quietly, snuck up on the targets, but when they took out their first set of targets, things began to go wrong. It just so happened that a flight of interceptors from the local Alarian city were on maneuvers in the Fival system, and they were just taking off from their usually deserted base on the third Fival moon. They swooped down on the task force out of nowhere.
So that is what happened?
Yeah. Well, they were lucky. The Alarians weren't carrying torpedoes because they were on a training mission. If they had, well, it would have been a lot worse.
It was still pretty bad, Faith said flatly, but softly, and bowed her head.
Leo reached out and caressed her cheek. She had known all the crews, worked closely with the captains and the engineers. I know I'm going to miss Ivan, too. He was a good guy. Ivan joked around at the briefings before the mission. Then the night before we left, we sat around the lounge, him drinking vodka and me drinking rum.
Leo could hear his voice cracking as he remembered.
Yeah, and his engineer, Alex, always treated my crews so good, getting them food and drink while they worked.
What exactly happened? Faith asked, sounding like she was about to cry too.
I didn't see it. Packer and Logan did. They said the Warrior was making a break from the surface.
Well, they just got unlucky and ran into 10 Alarians at once. Leo paused there.
It took a lot of hits, and Packer thought their reactor got hit, and it all went up in one explosion.
I guess they were lucky. Nobody died in a vacuum.
Faith started to shake at this point. Leo hugged her tight. After a few minutes, she stopped shaking and turned and hugged him back.
You okay? He asked softly.
Yeah, I guess I was just shook up and scared that someday it might be you.
Leo hugged her tightly and didn't say a word. Packer, are you sleeping? The seldom heard voice of Logan came over the speakers. No, I was just doing an old Indian trick I learned once. Rest your eyes and listen intently. Yeah, sure, whatever. Logan's voice came back sarcastically. Leo thumbed his comm unit. Okay, that is enough. You two are supposed to keep traffic to a minimum. Right you are, Captain. Sleeping. Ha, Packer retorted. The usually quiet man responded. Leo punched up several displays and ran through a couple of programs, then decided to indulge a pet interest and looked up the history of the American Civil War, zoning out the idle noises on the bridge. Half an hour later, he looked up to see what his shift partner, Fernucci, was studying. Is that a Larian physiology you have on the screen? Yeah, you never know who I might be called upon to give medical assistance to, the medic/gunner replied. Leo just snorted and returned to his own studies. Chapter 38. Anything nearby? No, just some more of those little lizards. Okay, we walk from here. Ruck up. The order is passed down the line, then back up. Winchester, stay here with the vehicles. We'll call you in 2 hours, maximum. Standing operating procedure. Okay, Leo, the mechanical voice responded. Leo tapped the droid on the shoulder and turned back to the line of men about to move over the top of the sand dune. By the numbers, folks. Faraday went over the top of the dune first, just a dark shadow on a very dark night. Then Holliday and Fundikowski followed him at equal intervals. Then it was Leo's turn. He went up and over the dark green sand dune, oriented himself quickly, and followed the men who had just gone before him. 1 hour later, they were within visual range of the target. Sensors show nothing but the wreckage of 2 humans. Dead or alive? Hard to tell. I can run a scan if you want. Leo thought about it for a second. Okay, lowest level you got. 2-second burst. Abe activated his hand unit, punched in a few buttons. Looking up at the display, the Israeli tanker shook his head and whispered, no way to tell. Okay, let's make the approach. Leo tapped his shoulder and motioned for Holliday and Sergei Fundikowski to move in towards the wreckage. The partners detached themselves from the shadows and slowly and silently made their way towards the downed ship. The two moved almost as one, each stopping when the other moved. They blended in almost perfectly with the rocky area, even with the pale blue dwarf star overhead, which made this a binary star system. Leo looked at his watch. 6 more hours until daylight on this side of the planet. Then temperatures would reach 110 degrees. Leo, we got 2 green lights, Abe said excitedly. Yeah, I see it, as he rubbed his chin thoughtfully, feeling the 2 days' growth of beard. Fenucci? A few seconds later, the Roman citizen was next to him. Get in there. See what treatment those guys need. The man nodded and started to move away. Leo grabbed him quickly by the shoulder. I'm not done yet. And send Holliday and Fundy to the far side and have them set up the security points. Yes, sir, anything else? No, get going. Then Leo motioned for Abe, who was standing nearby. I want you to set up a perimeter, but give me Flavius in 10 minutes. Got it. Okay, let's move in. Leo started walking, not looking back, knowing that Abe was moving quickly to set up a defensive perimeter around the wreckage. Ducking underneath various portions of twisted metal, stepping over destroyed pieces of the black ship. Finding the remains of the portal, he entered the interior of the ship, slinging his carbine over his shoulder in one fluid motion. Fenucci had set up a small but bright light in the cockpit area and was working on one of the 2 people lying on what used to be the wall. How are they? Well, that one over there is unconscious, numerous broken bones along with some signs of dehydration. He is stable for now and should make it till the ship arrives, he stated, not looking up at Leo. This one has a compound spiral fracture of his left leg, a concussion, severe dehydration. My guess, he is the ranking officer, is probably giving all his water to his partner here. Leo looked over the man Fenucci was working on and let out a low whistle. Something wrong, Captain? The medic said, looking at Leo for the first time since he had entered the remains of the ship. I know this guy. He was the officer to interrogate me when we came back from the Semna system. I kind of thought he was a jerk. So what are they doing this deep in Illyrian territory? The medic replied, going back to work. Leo heard a noise behind him and knew it was Flavius coming in. Get up here, tool man. The headlight the man was wearing bounced as the man approached. Yeah, Cap? Leo looked at his watch before responding. You got 2 hours to burrow into what's left of the ship. Dig out the files for the last 5 months. download them, then set up a virus to eat anything in the computer's memory and turn it into gobbledygook. But Captain, it couldn't take me a half an hour to figure out what I can plug into that still works, the man whined. Then you should stop complaining and get started, Leo barked quickly. The man muttered something, and Zun slugged the backpack off his shoulders and opened it up. Two small droids flew out of the pack and landed in front of Flavius, who whipped out his comm panel and began hitting buttons. The two droids stood there, patiently, until Flavius hit certain codes, said the word go twice, and they flew off silently. Toggling his comm unit on his belt, Leo activated his command frequencies. Professor, Professor, Strawberry, Strawberry. King, King, this is Professor, Strawberry, Strawberry. Roger, Professor. King out. Leo knew the Winchester would now be starting up the tank and hover bikes and start them moving towards the crash site. Leo looked at his watch. The vehicle should be here in about 20 minutes, where it had taken the men an hour to walk here. Moving the switch again, Leo made another contact. Merlin, Merlin, Coconut, Coconut. King, King, this is Merlin, Coconut, Coconut, ETA 2.5. Merlin, this is King, Roger, King out. Cap, the one guy's waking up, Fanucci announced. Okay, Leo walked over to the Chinese captain who was leaning against the now wall, but prior to the crash had been the ceiling. How's my lieutenant? Doc Fanucci says he will be fine. The man nodded, then smiled slightly. So we meet again, Captain Grant. Almost didn't recognize you with that camouflage paint on, he said in a raspy voice. Hey, if I knew it was you, I would have turned down the mission, Leo responded, reaching for his canteen and unscrewing the top. The man slipped slowly from the canteen. Leo held it up for him. Any bad guys around? The captain asked after he finished drinking. Not that we can tell. We should have you and your lieutenant out of here in about 3 hours. You guys working on the computer? Yeah. Download, run a virus, then rig it for the whole thing for detonation. When we get done here, there won't be a big enough piece of metal left for the Alarians to make a dagger out of. Good. Sorry you and your men had to come all this way for nothing. We don't have any real intelligence to take back to the Admiral. We did not come for the information. We came back for you guys. You take it easy. I have some things to check out. Pretty soon the line will be here. Then it's clean sheets, cold beer, all the way back to the fleet. Gracias, the man said, holding up the canteen. De nada, Leo responded as he walked away. Sparky, the professor is coming. Is the perimeter up? Up, King. We got all the sensors in place. In fact, we have the vehicles on read now, Abe responded. Good. Anything else going on? No, things are looking good out here. Okay, we got, and he looked at his watch, about 3 hours till we get out of here. Keep the guys looking sharp. It should be smooth sailing. Till then, King out. Leo looked around at the partially lit bridge. Fanucci was busy with the lieutenant. Flavius was pulling out wires and muttering softly. Kneeling next to the intelligence officer, he reached for the canteen, took a swig. How did you get in this mess anyways? The captain reached back for the canteen, took a drink. Well, we were 3 systems away from Alar. The Emperor's planet? Yeah, trying to get some contacts, gather some information. See if there's any word on the Imperial fleet mobilizing. The man laid there and coughed briefly. While we were leaving to go back to the fleet, we had just taken off when we got hit by a bunch of 2-person fighters. They shot us up and we ran. Got away. We only got this far in the system when our luck ran out. Our improvised repairs ran out. The ground came up and hit us. It was a wonder we got this far, really. So do you know who hit you? Yeah, I think it was a bunch of Laglies. No clan affiliation, just a bunch of criminals trying to score big. They hassled us in a bar a couple days before we lifted off and asked us to surrender during the attack. So I'm sure we weren't found out by the Imperial security. Leo agreed with that assessment. If it had been an organized effort, then the intelligence ship and the 2 officers would probably have been found days ago. So is there any indication whatsoever that the Imperial fleet is moving? The other captain shook his head. None that we could see. And something that unusual would be the talk of every bar from here to the frontier. You're probably right. From what I've read here, there has not been a call up for the Emperor's fleet in over 100 years. Yeah, well, let's hope it stays that way, the injured man replied. Heck, I pray that just about every day, Leo echoed. Chapter 39. Come on, Leo, you must have some idea. None. I told you everything I know. You always know more than you are telling.
Do you want to see a playback of the transmission?
No, I guess not, the large man said, hanging his head. Say, are you going to eat those chips?
Yes, I am. Get your own food. You can't have any of mine, Leo stated firmly, sliding his plate back a few inches.
I still think you're hiding something, Fia announced, just as Leo was about to bite into his ham and cheese sandwich.
Leo took a bite and shook his head, more to himself than anyone else. Why don't I eat in my cabin?
A hand sneaked over Leo's shoulder and grabbed two big french fries.
Because then you would miss all of the thought-provoking conversations. Holiday, I swear, I'm going to catch you one of these times and stick a fork in your wrist.
The ranger sat down and put his tray across the table from Leo and changed the subject.
I think the Admiral is going to give us medals.
What for? Pablo Verde asked, coming into the dining area.
Well, I don't know a lot of things. The diplomatic mission to Semna. Or maybe rescuing those two spies last month. A lot of things.
Leo sighed and rolled his eyes, but before he could speak, Moon spoke up.
Medals? We don't need no stinking medals.
Yeah, who are you going to show them to anyways?
Anybody here in the fleet is not going to be impressed. We have not seen anyone else since we woke up, Via retorted.
Well, then maybe he's going to send us back to Earth. I would love to see it again,
especially Arizona, Holiday added.
Hey, you know you can leave anytime you want. There's the airlock. Don't let it hit you in the ass on the way out, Moon stated flippantly.
Heck no, and let Funde take over as the best shot on board? No way.
Leo finished his sandwich and what was left of his fries.
Do you think it's another diplomatic mission, Cap? Pablo asked.
Has another ship gone down somewhere? Holiday inquired.
Come on, Leo, we won't tell anyone you told us, Fia added. For the last time, Leo raised his voice sufficiently for everyone here. I do not know why the Admiral wants us.
Geez, no need to shout, Leo, Fia stated.
It's only a question, Moon responded.
Take it easy, Cap, Holiday stated.
Sorry, Pablo said timidly.
Arg!
Leo shouted and grabbed his tray and stomped away from the table.
Chapter 40. Leo put his feet up on the opposing bench and leaned back in his seat.
Do these guys know that my crew won't hurt you, sir?
The Admiral looked over his two bodyguards, who nodded slowly at him. The Admiral smiled as he turned back to Leo.
They know. They just like to keep you guys guessing.
Well, they certainly do that. Leo raised his mug to beer to salute the two bodyguards, who did not respond in any way that Leo could see. The Admiral took a sip of his glass of tea and raised his glass as well. After sitting for another 10 minutes, Leo felt a nice warm feeling throughout his body.
Sir? Leo asked hesitantly.
Yes, the Admiral said, calmly, keeping his head back, leaned against the wall with his eyes closed.
What kind of emissary do you think the Earth is going to send?
Well, I'm not sure. Their message was very vague from what I could deduce, though it was one mutually agreed upon by all governments of the Earth.
Is that good or bad, sir?
Not sure, the Admiral said, raising his glass to his lips again and draining. Probably someone mutually respected and trusted by all the different Earth governments. That is possibly good if he is an honorable man, that he is highly regarded by the leaders for his moral courage, upstanding character, and intelligence. But they could also be sending us a person who has not stepped on too many toes and has made friends and allies in all the right places, and campaigned to get his ambassadorship so he could go down to history books. The Admiral placed his glass on the table. In other words, a politician.
God save us from the politicians, Leo stated flatly.
The Admiral echoed his sentiment. Amen, my good captain. Amen.
Leo finished his drink and sat his mug down on the table, then pulled out his comm panel.
Oh, yes, sir. The two systems closest to the rendezvous star system are gaseous and dust. The gaseous one had three planets around, a blue giant, and the dust one has two planets with multiple asteroid belts and a red dwarf.
Good. If we get a chance, I want to check them out, see if they have any minerals we can use.
Do you want to stop there on the way to the rendezvous point? It wouldn't take us much out of the way. We could still get to the meeting on time.
The Admiral looked over the comm panel, which Leo had slid to him. Then he reached out his arms and yawned.
No, maybe on the way back if we have time. We'll see, Captain.
Leo took the comm panel and nodded.
Larry, the Admiral said in a slightly louder voice.
Yes, sir,
the computer responded promptly.
How much time till we reach the meeting point?
There was a slight pause, barely noticeable, really. On the course laid in, and speed does not vary from what the first mate plotted, than exactly 40 hours. Thank you, Larry. The Admiral turned his gaze to Leo. Captain, since it is late, I'm going to turn in. Shall I see you tomorrow for our workout? Sure, sir. 900 hours sharp, sir? Leo asked back. That will be fine, and get ready to learn a few things. This old dog has some new tricks. And with that, the Admiral got up and put his glass neatly into the replicator bin, left the lounge area flanked by his dark-suited bodyguards.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Scouts Out by A.A. Foringer, as read by the author. This audio production, copyright 2015, all rights reserved. A new episode of Scouts Out is released every Saturday. To get an ebook version of this story, go to smashwords.com, where you can find other stories in the Outfitters universe. The story you have just listened to may contain slight variations from the original text due to translation from written word to spoken word, but overall, the story has not been changed. To contact Aaron, visit his blog at aaforinger.com or email him at aaforinger@gmail.com. He is also on Twitter as A.A. Foringer. He craves your feedback, so get to the comm link of your choice and commence with the typing.